just a minute we start the Meldon Law Monday version of the Buddy Martin Show. Glad to be with you. I mean, really glad to be with you tonight. Hope you'll come join and listen and chip in. Always loving to hear from you. And we'll be talking more about the events of the weekend. Obviously, some Super Bowl stuff. I'll be talking to David Moulton shortly. And then, of course, after that, we'll be also talking to... It's Monday night. That means it must be Fran's Beard time, right? Aaron Duke will be here, so glad you can join us. Good evening to you. Welcome to the program. I'm Buddy Martin. We're heard Monday through Thursday on this network right here. And hope you'll come and join us. We always love having you along. Tell your friends and neighbors. Buddy Martin shows on the air.
Yes, it's time again for Buddy Martin. Call him up and tell him what you're thinking. But be kind because he's doing the best he can.
Better. Stronger. Faster.
Mama says that alligators are ornery because they got all them teeth but no toothbrush.
Hey, what if the voice calls while you're gone?
Take a message.
Bye.
You ready, champ?
I'm ready for this my whole life.
I'm incapable of small talk. But that's why you love me, right?
Kind of intimidating to be in the presence of so many great athletes.
Good evening to you. Welcome to the program on a Monday night, Meldon Law Monday. Glad to be with you. It's been quite a last few days. Had a terrific time Friday night at Spurrier's Gridiron Grill with the dedication of the Steve Spurrier Way. What a turnout of stars, Gator stars. We are really happy to be a part. Kudos, by the way, to our friend Freddie Wiebe for doing a terrific job on that event, and we're going to talk more about it as we go along, tell you more about what we saw, what we did. I was honored to be a part of that, and Coach Spurrier and many of his former players are there, household names you'll recognize, and nice-sized crowd joined in that Friday night video. So very happy to have been there. We, of course, had the Super Bowl, which we're going to talk about momentarily. Get your thoughts on it. The game, did you like it? Halftime show, a lot of controversy. My friend Terry Bradshaw got in some trouble for what he said, apparently. People, I think, misinterpreting what he said. We'll talk about that. But we got the man who covers the NFL with us and our friend David Moulton, who's usually on Wednesday nights. But because of his versatility and ability to cover things like professional football, all the while being one of the best commentators for college football, we decided to bring him on early. So let's hear from Jeffrey Meldon, and we'll go to the Orange and Blue Room. We'll talk to David Moulton.
Jeffrey, what are you doing?
Well, I'm joining the band, of course. Since Meldon Law is the official law firm partner of the Florida Gators, I want to help.
Dad. We're litigators. Let's stick to helping people in the courtroom.
Well, can we still hang out and jam a little bit?
At Meldon Law, we won't back down.
Meldon Law, we won't back down. Glad to be able to bring that to you tonight. Before we go right to David, he's here. I want to just put a picture here of a friend, member of the family. And I apologize in advance for if intruding on you, but we've lost a member of our family here. And Sammy, Brendan's Sella's dog, we love so much. And he got away on Thursday night. We've got APBs out for him everywhere, all over social media, went to all the shelters, been online. So we're just going to put his picture up there for 1 second and let you look at dear Sammy. We're leaving the light on for Sammy. We're hopeful somehow he'll make his way back here, but he's really missed. And we're just praying for his protection. And he'll find his way back home. Sammy, we love you, buddy. All right. Okay. Sorry I had to get that in there. Real quick, I'm going to put this up before David comes. This was an event on Friday night that I was really honored to be a part of. And really glad that there he is, the head ball coach himself. This was, he was had the occasion having the Steve Spurrier Way named after him, and it's an official deal. It wasn't just somebody slapping a sign up. It was there was official state designation, and of course that's right there at Celebration Point where Spurrier's Grand Grill is, and so he now have a street named after him. I told a story about my street experience. I always wanted to have a street named after me, and I had a guy that worked for me in St. Pete. I'm sure David's heard of him. His name was Beano Cook. And Beano Cook always liked to say, "Buddy, they named a street after you." And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Yeah, it's called Dead End." Good evening, David. How you doing?
I'm good, buddy. I'm surprised it took this long for Steve to
And that's the truth. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And a subject was brought up, and I made a sarcastic comment of, yeah, what we need is one more thing named after Spurrier, right? We haven't got enough things. I mean, it's high school field, the stadium, the practice facility up in South Carolina, he and Jerry. And I said, but now I think about it, I can't think of anybody who's done more for the University of Florida than this man right here. So I'm okay with that. They can't name enough things for Steve Spurrier. In fact, I've recommended, let's take I-75 from Johnson City in Knoxville all the way down to Gainesville. Let's call it Steve and Jerry Expressway, because that's what brought him to Gainesville. Anyway, that's just a great evening, a lot of good vibes. Doring was there, Werfel, et cetera, and just a fun time. So don't get to do that very often, David. And when you do, you'd like to take advantage of it.
Yeah, I've seen some of the pictures, and I can understand why many of his former players would come back for an occasion. He did a lot for them.
And the funny part about it is, and not to dwell too much on it, but the fact is that this is an honor, which he appreciates it. He doesn't make a big deal out of that. He really doesn't. Yeah, I mean, he likes to celebrate championships, you know?
I'll tell you what, though. You get something named after you, you know, whether they do a statue or a street or a bridge or whatever the case may be. I mean, that's, in a way, that's winning a championship of some kind.
You're right. I mean, have you ever had anything named after you, David?
No.
That you can say publicly. I mean, that you can say publicly.
Buddy, I'm lucky I have my name on the radio show. Okay. I mean, that's about it.
And you can share that.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think it should be Moulton and Miller, although I understand the alphabetical, whatever. Long as we're on a subject, tell folks, you can hear David now. He's one of us up here in North Florida. He's not lollygagging on the beach, sleeping under coconut trees anymore down in Lake County. He's up in the cold country in Jacksonville. Been there, what, 4 months, 5 months maybe?
Yeah, been 5 months already. And, we're on in Lake City. 106.1 FM. We're on in the morning, 6 to 9 a.m. And Miller and Moulton's the name of the show. You can go to the FloridaSportsNetwork.com and download our podcast. We post every hour. We even do a bonus hour from 9 to 10. We post that as well. So check it out.
Cool. Very cool. Well, I say this, and I don't say it because he's just a guest on the show. He knows this is true because I lived in Charlotte County, right just above Fort Myers, for almost 8 years. And I was a regular listener before I knew David. I listened to his show a lot. And as you know, I told him I really enjoyed it. You get a perspective you don't often get in those small markets, you know, for a guy like you. And I really appreciate it. By the way, I sent you we'll get on to the Super Bowl, but I sent you one of these polls on airports. Did you see it?
I did see it.
And what were we talking about 2 weeks ago?
You asked me, you know, what is it about either Fort Myers I missed or liked about Jacksonville? And I said, there's only two things in Jacksonville that take a backseat to Fort Myers. And one of which was the airport. Mm-hmm. The Fort Myers airport had it going on, and the Jacksonville one doesn't have nearly as many direct flights. And sure enough, apparently the Fort Myers airport, amongst the 50 busiest airports in the country, graded number one in the country, and Tampa graded number four.
And I told you at the time it was my favorite airport. I flew out of that airport for 8 years, and I loved the Fort Myers airport. I had a choice to go other places, but, yeah, that was – so there you go. It just shows we were right, man. We got good taste, right?
I don't know if we can get sports right, but we know airports.
There you go, right. Well, I mean, we can start just talking in general about this, the game, the plays, the controversy, mm-hmm. the halftime show, the commercials. I'll let you pick. Where do you want to start?
Well, there's been 15 Super Bowls, buddy, that have basically been decided in the last 2 minutes, one way or another. 15 Super Bowls. This is now number 15. And if you start to go Super Bowl by Super Bowl, by process of elimination, buddy, I think the game that we just witnessed is the top five Super Bowl of all time. Now, you know, if the flag hadn't been called and Jalen Hurts and the Eagles get the ball back with a minute 40 to go and a timeout down three, who knows? Maybe this ends up being the greatest Super Bowl of all time. But or the second ever that would have gone to overtime. I didn't like the call. I applaud Bradberry for handling it, the cornerback, the way he did and coming out and saying, well, I did grab him. Okay, I did hold him. You know, my momentum was going the wrong way, and I needed to grab him so I could start to pull my momentum back the other way to go with him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he said, I, you know, thought I'd get away with it, thought they'd let it go. That's my only question. You know, there were probably both sides of the ball, 20 of those type of instances, at least. I mean, what do we have? We had, you know, 65 pass attempts. Do you think we had 20 such incidents and 19 of them weren't called and that one got called in that situation? You know, that's tough. That's tough. It was it a penalty? Yeah. Even the guy who committed it said it was a penalty. So to criticize the call, it's tough to do. It's just that the old adage, you can call holding on every play. How many holding penalties got called in the game on the offensive line? That would be zero. You know, how many defensive pass interference, illegal contact, holding calls were there in the game? One. That one. You know, the only other pass interference was an offensive pass interference with the Eagles wide receiver blocking before he's allowed to. So, you know, technically got the call right, but there's a lot of discretion involved in officiating. I would have wished they had let that one go.
Interesting. I have a couple of good friends that are officials. One's a great official, basketball, called six Final Fours, and we have had these discussions a lot. And I ask him things about makeup calls, and we all think that there are, and they say there aren't, and whatever. I ask him about swallowing the whistle at the end of a game. No official wants his call to decide the game, I can tell you that. Mm-hmm. That official didn't want it to either. And he tells me this: a penalty is a penalty no matter what it's called.
And I believe that, buddy. I do. Okay. I just have to believe that they allowed that play to be unpenalized for the first 58 minutes. Yeah. Therefore, to me, you allow it to be unpenalized with a minute 50 to go. That's all.
Yeah, and I get it. And if you're an Eagles fan, you certainly think it was the bad call, et cetera, et cetera. I understand all that. But all in all, saying they don't want us to comment on the halftime show, they said, I don't blame them. That's another story. But the game, it was, and you made this call Wednesday when you picked. You said the team likely that has the ball last will win.
I did. I must admit, I think on your show I picked the Eagles. On my show Friday morning, I picked the Chiefs.
I can't lose.
Well, but I was flip-flopping like crazy on this game, and ultimately I went with coaching and the quarterback. Mm-hmm. But if you think about this, when Mahomes took over with 5:15 to go and the game tied at 35, the Eagles had 150 more yards of offense and had run 30 more plays. That's an entire half of football. I mean, that's how much the Eagles, and think about it. Mm-hmm. If we had said before the game that Jalen Hurts is going to throw for 120 plus more yards than Mahomes, and he's going to rush for 70 yards and three touchdowns, mm-hmm. I mean, we would have thought that Philadelphia won this game by at least three touchdowns. Mm-hmm. I mean, Hurts was amazing. Buddy, I got to tell you, until Mahomes scrambled with just outside of 2 minutes to go, and he ran that ball inside the 20, until that play, I thought Hurts was going to win MVP even if they lost. I thought he was going to become the second guy on a losing team to win the MVP. He was amazing.
He was amazing, and I did like you. I went with the coach and quarterback and picked the Chiefs by two or whatever. I think it was 34-31, whatever. Not that I know anything because I was guessing. But I did like the quality of the game was good. I had the feeling that you were going to be right. The last guy with the ball was going to win the game. And I'd have been okay with whichever team won. They were the two best teams. It's well played, well coached game. And it's too bad the Eagles had to lose because they played well. But,
no doubt. I'll say this, though. The field was an abomination. And the NFL.
Well, yeah, I want to get to that. Yeah.
And not just the NFL, but that stadium. Because I believe, buddy, wasn't that the site of the semifinal between TCU and Michigan? And they were slipping and sliding all over the place.
Right.
Okay,
right.
That night. I mean, clearly this whole tray of grass that they wheel in and then they wheel it out is not working. That field has been slippery from the get-go. And I'm to the point in which, listen, we all prefer football be played on grass. But clearly what they're doing is they're not getting it right. And to me, if they're going to play major football games in that stadium, they might as well turf the sucker from now on because it ain't working.
You're right, and here's the story I wanted to talk about. I'm kind of saving it till the end, but since you brought it up, I read this. The grass was grown at a local sod farm in Phoenix, okay, number one. Installed 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Fields been rolled every morning for daily sunshine at a total cost of, get this, $800,000. And among the players saying it was the worst field they ever played, Hassan Reddick of the Eagles, I'm not going to lie, it was the worst field I've ever played on. It was disappointing. It's the NFL. You would think they would be better. We could get some better play. That's what it is. I don't know. Maybe the league will look at it, tell Arizona to step up and stuff. There's no excuse for that. None.
No,
that's a
no there isn't. And it's clearly a problem. And it was not just for NFL games. It's also for major college games. Mm-hmm. It's an issue. And it has been an issue for more than just the last 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And it clearly needs to be addressed. Here's the other thing. Do you know why? And I know that there are folks that don't want us to mention the halftime show. But do you know why the halftime show was produced the way it was with everybody on those?
Yeah, because of
whatever
the field.
You call them. Because the field was considered too soft. And if they built a stage, the stage would have been too heavy for the field. And that's why they had to lift all those dancers and Rihanna and get them off of the field. Okay. Yeah. How absurd is that?
Yeah.
By the way, she's pregnant and scared to death of heights.
Really?
No. She's scared of heights. Okay. And they said, sorry, we're going to have to elevate you and put you up in the air. And so she fought through her fear of heights to, perform, the halftime show there, by the way, for $0.
Yeah, but it's worth a lot of money to you. So
it is. And she's a billionaire. So.
Yeah. I mean, look, can you remember the last halftime show that you really liked a lot? What's your all-time favorite? Okay.
Little biased. I've been to a few. I was at the halftime. Michael Jackson performed halftime in Pasadena.
Terrific.
And that was, up until then, the NFL halftimes were like local marching bands. Michael Jackson was the first time.
There were a few others.
There was Beyonce and Bruno Mars, along with Coldplay, but I don't really care about that. But Beyonce and Bruno Mars did a joint halftime together about seven, 8 years ago.
It was okay.
It was amazing. And
Bruno I like Mars Coldplay, is, but I thought it was
so.
It's all about your musical taste, which mine are
Prince.
Outdated.
I was in Miami when Prince played Purple Rain in the rain. It's going to be tough to top that.
Yeah, really. And the one I remember was more not so much a halftime show, was a national anthem. in Tampa with Whitney Houston.
Who sang it the day before? She actually lip synced it. It was recorded the day before in an empty studio.
But the moment, and I happened to be sitting in the stands with my friend Terry Bradshaw, was his sponsor. Hardee's was sponsor. He was working with them. He asked me to come down there with him, which I did. Sat in the stands, and remember the political environment of what was going on.
We had just gone to war.
Yep. First time I ever remember getting frisked going to a stadium that night. We all did, you know, and it just sent chills down my spine that night. And that was not a halftime show. That was just a pregame. But hey, turns out, like you say, you had a terrific ball game.
Well, by the way, I thought Chris Stapleton, and I'm not a country music guy.
I thought he
did a tremendous job with the anthem. Apparently, that's the first time he ever did the anthem, ever.
Nothing like we've ever had before. He is such a gifted musician. I'm not a big country western fan. I like some, but that was sensational, I will say. You're right. So the Super Bowl's over. Football's over. Not really. Some guys are working, like Shane Matthews.
For about an hour.
Yeah. Well, Shane Matthews normally does a show on Monday nights. He's working for the Orlando Guardians as a quarterback coach, and he's in Texas. That whole unit, you know, they all work and live in Texas and fly to their home site for their games. And Shane was usually on Monday nights, and he's not on tonight. So there are a few guys working. All power to them. I got to tell you, I got to be real honest about it. I'm just not as interested in all season football as I used to be. I used to love it. Listen, I covered the USFL. I covered the Bandits. I covered the Denver Gold. They drew 35,000-40,000 people out there, and it was wonderful, whatever. But you know what? There are other things, David, and that I enjoy in the off season. Like I really like watching baseball. I know nobody cares about baseball. I like watching it. I don't necessarily like reporting on it. I like golf. And boy, did we see some good golf this week. Wow, Arizona. And I like Gator baseball. They got a terrific team. Basketball team is struggling. I like to watch. Anyway, so there's so much more to watch in the offseason than there used to be. How about you, David? You get involved, you get all worked up about spring football.
Well, yeah, and I kind of take on every now and then on the show those that are only football fans. And now they'll say, well, you know, I'll tune back in 7 months. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, come on now. First off, if you're a football fan, there's a lot that's going to go on in the next 10 weeks between now and through the draft. I mean, you should at least pay attention for the next 10 weeks. You want to take May, June, July off, you know, maybe even August. Okay. But, you know, the next 10 weeks are very important. We could just look at the Super Bowl champions. Look at everything they did during that 10-week period last year, from trading Tyreek Hill and the guys they drafted who were major contributors to their win, etc. But I'm with you, buddy. I'm a sports fan, and I'm very appreciative of all the sports. And although I don't like what Major League Baseball did today, making the runner on second permanent, I hate that. I would be more in favor, quite frankly, only playing 11 innings and there being a tie, to be honest with you, and going by winning percentage to determine who makes the playoffs. I understand them wanting 14 and 16 inning games. I totally get that. Yeah. And all the other leagues have a time limit on overtime in the regular season. I get it. To me, though, that completely gimmicks up baseball. And if you have the better pitcher, you can negate that advantage by putting a runner on second with nobody out. You can score a run without the basis of a hit. Well, then what's the benefit of having the better pitcher on the mound than the opposing team? I think it gimmicks it up. It's kind of like hockey, a 3-on-3 in overtime. I hate it. That's not hockey. It's ridiculous. Okay, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, no, I get you. I do like a couple of things. I'm not crazy about the runner on second because that kind of screws the whole game up in a way. You didn't talk about the other controversial ones. They have a pitch clock now. They also have to
worry about. Which I'm a big fan of.
And you can't pull the shift anymore, right?
No, can't do it. I'm a huge fan of the pitch clock. Mm-hmm. I saw it in action in the mid-90s in the Northern League and the Upper Midwest, and it worked. It worked in a big way. And, oh, by the way, the last couple of years in the minors, it's worked to the tune of 20 to 30 minutes a game it's reduced the time of game. So I'm a big fan of a pitch clock. If nothing else, it's kind of like in golf. You know, they've never really had a serious crackdown on slow play. They complain about it, but they don't do anything about it. I mean, it's real simple. You want to speed guys up? Well, speed them up.
Yeah, you're
right. Keep track of how much time they're taking. Trust me, all right? You start penalizing them, you'll be surprised how much quicker their pre-shot routine will be. And to David Hunter, the only thing I'd say about the 2006 halftime show was that the Stones were great, but the Super Bowl was in Detroit that year. How could they not have a Motown halftime when the Super Bowl was in Detroit? I just thought that they, yeah, and the Stones were great, but I'm like, how do you not do Motown in Detroit? It just seemed weird to me.
Yeah, true. So much to talk about. We'll just make a quick comment because I tend to talk more about national sports when you're on because you're well-versed in it. I'm not particularly, but LeBron overtook Kareem, and we heard it was hardly a blip on the screen, right, in scoring.
Well, I will say the NBA did a really good job last week of garnering a lot of attention. It just so happened that LeBron was passing Kareem early in the week, but to have the trade deadline during Super Bowl week, because I think most sports fans have kind of grown tired of the whole Radio Row and the dog and pony show in which everybody's there, but the hawk and a product and whatever. Could you just kick off the damn game, okay? You know, I'm interested in the anthem, the halftime, and the game. Could you just get to that?
Give me some
balls. So I thought the NBA got a lot of media attention last week, that the trade deadline during Super Bowl week, if I was the NBA, I would do this every year from now on because it seems to get them a lot of attention.
Yeah. All right, so apparently the star of Radio Row, you've been to Radio Row, right?
Oh, yeah, many times.
I've done a few shows there, not maybe eight or nine, but anyway. And apparently the star was Deion Sanders.
Well,
smart move showing up there, right?
He's pretty entertaining.
Sure they had him on 20 shows, I'm sure.
Well, what can he talk about?
Seriously. Major League Baseball.
He's played and won the Super Bowl with two different franchises.
Yeah.
I mean, so you can talk about being in the Super Bowl, and then obviously he can talk about his new day job. And and he's very glib. So I'm a Deion guy, always have been. I get it. I do. I know the downside, but I don't know what to tell you. All right.
I'm going to
get your nay. I'm yay. Yeah,
I got you. Okay. I want to get into this softly, but I know I turned off the TV after the game, did not hear the Bradshaw interview. And I have another different take on it now that I know what happened. But I got to tell you, I really got frosted about it because people like Rich Carlos, whom I know, I've known for years, who kicked for the Broncos and who I've done lots of shows with in Denver, whatever, come on and start calling for Bradshaw to retire. Now, I get it, you know, but I thought to myself, I wrote him back, I don't respond to these kind of things. But I said, when you couldn't knock it in from 50 yards anymore, did anybody tell you to retire? So the guy lost a little bit off his fastball. He's also had cancer all year long, you know, and I get it. He's long in the tooth, but that's just disrespectful. There was a whole thing about Bradshaw. Should quit. No good. Da-da. Ask the people on the show who know. Ask the people on the Fox who know. Without Terry Bradshaw, and I granted our day all passes, that show would not have survived. As a matter of fact, when Bradshaw left that show after whatever it was, two or three, four, with depression, was away for two or three weeks, they seriously were concerned about the future of the show. And one of the members of the cast, who I won't remember, went to the bosses and said, you got to get him back here, and whatever it takes, money or whatever, he's got to be on this show, or we won't have a show. And so he came back, and he's done well, and he's, I don't know, 20 years, whatever it is now. So I don't know. I'll let you weigh in on it. I did not see the final interview, but I will say this. Knowing Terry as I do, which is very well, is that he always likes to poke fun at you. He would hear me now, you say, buddy, that's a dumb-looking hat on you, and you look like you're 10 pounds overweight. That's what he does. He does it to himself. He's self-deprecating. It's not like he's fat-shaming Andy Reid. But that's how it came off, apparently. I'm going to stop and let you talk about it.
Well, if you don't know Terry, and you know him very well, you could see where you're sitting there and he says to a fat guy, hey, waddle on over here. You could see where people go, ooh, well, that was rude.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, that's Terry. I will say this. You know how, like, ESPN continues to keep Lee Corso around, but
yeah,
they're going to great lengths to protect him as much as possible. Mm-hmm. He doesn't do the full 3 hours anymore.
Right.
For the most part, it's the first half hour, and it's the last half hour. All right. I thought Terry had a rough year this year, and you pointed out why. I mean, he was fighting for his life, health-wise. Okay, I do think, and I know it's been his thing to be the Fox guy on the podium doing the interviews after the Super Bowl. I think it may be time to turn to somebody
else.
Yeah,
I could see that.
That's all. And so, you know, hopefully next year he's healthier. He'll contribute a little bit more. I also think that Terry's associated with a group that has been together a long time. You know, Jimmy Johnson's nearly 80. He's been talking about retirement. You know, Terry's in his 70s now. I think people are, you know, there's been a lot of movement in the media circles. And so I think people are trying to push the narrative of, hey, does Fox need to shake up their pregame show? They've had guys there for 20 years. Is it time to shake it up? What are they really telling us anymore? So, but
well, they got
Tom
Brady next year. They can do a lot. So at $37 million a year. So
I don't know if he'll be on the show next year. I think he's taking a year off. But I know what you're saying. The other thing, though, is that they are number one in the ratings.
Have been for a while, and I get it. Sometimes I was going to say it's one thing, and I don't want to get overboard. I did, as you know, a lot of radio with Terry, and for two whole years we did a podcast. And my partner on the show was Tom Schmitz, who's 5'10", about 290, whatever. And he and I and Terry decided to go on this Nutrisystems diet with the idea that we were going to all lose weight.
Okay.
And we would put money in the middle. And so every week when he came on there, he would say, how's Fat Tom doing? You know? And it became kind of a badge of honor because Tom lost 50 pounds, okay?
Good.
So obviously he was motivating Tom by doing that. And that's what you have to understand about Terry. Now, was that the time to do it? Probably not. But that's who he is. So
there's
we'll
no
see.
Doubt. There's yeah. no doubt. I will say of all the networks, Fox is the one who over the last 20 years has been able to let their guys take some heat. Okay, and just let it pass.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I don't expect Fox to release a statement or do anything to Terry. I think they'll just go, well, in this day and age, probably shouldn't have said it, but what the heck.
Yeah. Got it. David, final thoughts on this week, and we got spring football coming up, we got golf coming up, we got the NBA, we got the tournament coming up.
I have a question. Yeah. I just have a question. How much does it cost to get a ticket to Gators gymnastics nowadays?
You can't get one.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
On the secondary market,
yeah.
What in the world does it cost to get a ticket to Gators gymnastics?
And they got LSU Friday night there. And like Scott Strickland said it on the air or somewhere about 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago, it's harder to get a gymnastics ticket than it is in basketball or football. And it's happening all over nationally. And obviously what we've seen out of those women, Trent Kennedy's been fantastic. And now that you've got Wong and another young girl coming, they're going to be good. And Fran Spirit is coming up next. Talk about this could be maybe, saying a lot, maybe the greatest gymnastics team of all time.
Wow. That's saying so. First off, if it's the greatest Gator gymnastics team of all time, that would be saying
something. Good point. Good point.
Right.
Yeah.
But wow. All I know is that, you know, I went to a few Gators gymnastics meets with my daughter. Now, I guess, is 8 to 10 years ago, and made the 250-mile drive and did it with a smile on my face. So I'm thrilled that the O-Dome is packed, and I call it the O-Dome. I don't know call it the O-Dome.
That's fine.
To me, it'll always be the O-Dome.
And
so, but I'm just thrilled that it's packed and they're getting the attention that they deserve. And quite frankly, Scott Strickland should thank them a lot, because his two marquee programs football and men's basketball, are not getting the job done.
Good point. I think this guy would agree with you on that right there. And second, even in France, let David go. But David, that remember, it's just 60 miles away from you now, too. So you can go up there and go to Spurrier's. In fact, I think Fran said he'd buy you dinner at Spurrier's if you go up there.
No.
I'll mortgage the house so we can get the prime rib.
No, I think both Fran and I, buddy, are making you pay. Okay, we love you, but we're making you pay.
All right, I'll go for that one. I'll just don't let Johnny eat for a month, and I'll take you guys to dinner. What the heck?
All right. Have a good night.
Thank you, David. The great David Moulton. Always love having him. Usually on Wednesday nights, but tonight because Super Bowl wanted to get him in. So thank you, David. All right, and there he is, the man of the hour, the guy you're waiting for, Francis Beard. Did I do a good job on that?
That sounded good. It's a little bit more hype than I need.
Or I can black and blue. How's that? There you go. Francis,
more
good
hype
to see
than
you.
I deserve, but thanks anyway.
You'll understand this. I got to give a quick commercial break, and we'll go right to you. All right. Share for our folks at Titan MRI. Well, I'll just go ahead and tell you about it. This is the commercial somewhere lurking, and I want to tell you about Titan MRI. I had an MRI recently. I couldn't believe the price, comparatively speaking. But Titan MRI is worth a short drive to Gainesville, wherever you're from. No insurance, no problem. You can pay with cash or card. And get this, with same-day scheduling available. You can start feeling better today because Titan MRI is North Central Florida's premier independent MRI facility. Come see why hundreds of patients are visiting our Gainesville location from Ocala, Marin County, Lake City, the villages all over. That's TitanMRI.com. Well, Francis, I enjoyed your stuff last couple. Well, let's pick up where we were talking about the gymnastics team. You wrote about it last week, and you and Dan Bond. And it's really, who would ever thought we'd be talking about gymnastics like this?
Well, you know, this has been building for some time. Rhonda Fain got it started with, she won three in a row, three national championships in a row with the great, goodness sake, they were good. They were so good. And this team potentially will be the best ever. And I'm not talking about in Florida, but ever. If they get everybody healthy and able to perform, I mean, you got to remember something. 2017 world champ all around, Morgan Hurd, silver medalist in 2018. She's still coming back from injury. Leah Clapper, All American, several perfect tens, hadn't performed this year. Riley McCusker, gold medalist on the Olympic bars, on the world championship bars team, has only performed once, still coming back from injury. Savannah Schoenhauer, all American, perfect 10 a couple times, still hadn't performed, and they're still coming back from injuries, and they're killing people. And when they get to a full lineup, you look at what Trinity's doing. You look at what Leanne Wong's doing. Now you got Kayla DiCello, who is a freshman who scores a perfect 10 and has the highest all-around score for a freshman in the entire country. And you get those people, and oh my gosh, this lineup is seriously stacked, to the point that Jenny's going to have to do some, she's going to have to massage some egos and tell some people who would be the star on any other team in the SEC, okay, you're only going to be able to perform on one or two events, maybe at the most, because we're just too loaded up.
How are you going to sit anybody down? How are you sitting anybody down?
Well, I can tell you two. I can tell you three who aren't going to sit, and that's Trinity Thomas and Liam Wong and Kayla DeCello. I mean, those three. And you know what's so cool about them is they're all such sweet-natured girls with good personalities, and they're very, very intelligent. You know, I think this entire team makes the, you know, all SEC honor roll, Scholastic honor roll, and everything like this. I mean, they're just so much fun, and particularly Trinity Thomas. I mean, what a personality to go with all that talent.
And a gorgeous young lady too. Gorgeous.
What a representative of the University of Florida. Yeah. I mean, really and truly, could you ask for a better representative of the University of Florida? And it comes at a great time because all this stuff about Jaden and Rashada, which I think has been a black mark on the University of Florida
and college football, particularly Florida.
Yeah, but I mean, it brings to light the Jaden Rashada issue, brings to light the fact that, you know, the NCAA cut loose with something that shouldn't have ever happened. They should have never cut this thing loose without some guardrails on it.
Well, they couldn't help it. The government made them do it. They had the rules.
The government they could have said, okay, here's the rules. We're going to do it. And they could have set up the rules, but they didn't.
Well, the NCAA, that's a whole other story. They got no colonies. They wouldn't do anything, so it didn't matter. And they were afraid of lawsuits. That's everything everybody does. They're afraid of lawsuits. But you're right. You're right. So let me, before I forget about it, I want to just jump in. I forgot to ask, did you watch the Super Bowl?
I did. And I've not only that, I'm mentioning in my column tomorrow my 10 favorite commercials.
All right, that's perfect because that was my next question. That was my next question. What were your three favorites?
I'm going to give you my top 10.
All right, I got three. All right, go ahead. Mine won't be in your top 10.
Ram trucks premature electrification tops it all, you know? I mean, it was absolutely hysterical. Two, Kia Binky Dad, the dad who gets in their all-terrain Telluride, it goes all over the place to get the Binky for his daughter, his infant daughter. And then in the end, she spits it out because she says she only likes the blue one. But the Binky Dad, that was good. Michelob Ultra New Members Day. Oh gosh, that was hysterical. And to get the celebrities they had there, Tony Romo doing the Bill Murray there at the end, Serena Williams, of course, putting. Ricky Fowler is in it. My goodness, that was good. T-Mobile, Bradley Cooper's mom, that was hysterical. Five, T-Mobile, new neighbor with O'Callan, John Travolta. Reprising his song that he did with Olivia Newton-John in Greece. I love that. Mm-hmm. Paramount Plus, Sylvester Stallone. I thought that was a funny. Ben Affleck, Dunkin' Donuts, Blue Moon, the Coors Light versus Miller Light.
We thought it was something else. It was Blue Moon.
Miller Light, Popcorners, Breaking Bad, and my final one, top 10, is the Uber One commercial. Those were my 10.
Well, I didn't make any of those. I had minor, not, don't ask me because I don't really understand some of those commercials. They were in my head. But I liked the Doritos one with the square, that was a good one. Uber was one of mine, and then Pringles. That was a reprise from last year of the Pringles box on it.
Yeah, and the fact that it wasn't original to me, you know, and I miss that. I'll tell you what I really miss, though, buddy. I miss the frogs, and I miss the lizard. You know what?
The best. That was the best.
That was the best, particularly. I also miss the. The Yes, I Am guy that Michelob had there, you know. Are you Dr. Anita Galakowicz? No. You know, he says, I am Dr. Galiwekix. And he says, you're Dr. Anita Galawakix? He says, yes, I am. That was those were great commercials. But, you know, I was glad to see one thing. We went back to a lot of original stuff and very, you know, they've been high in sexual content and stuff like that. And I thought high in content that was, that just really wasn't appropriate for kids who watch the Super Bowl. And most of the commercials I thought were really carefully done and the kind that you wouldn't mind your kid watching at all. Yeah. I thought that was, I appreciated that. I liked the originality of it. The Binky Dad one, though, gosh, that I laughed all the way through that. That as I did with the Ram trucks, the premature electrification.
And then Susan's right. I kind of missed the frogs and Clydesdales too. I'm with her on that.
Yeah. But what a nice game. I don't think anybody's given Kadarius Toney enough credit for what he did. What he did.
Yep.
The second thing is Kadarius Toney. What he emphasizes is what idiots are running the New York Giants.
Really?
They traded this guy for next to nothing, a future number one draft pick. Mm-hmm. And next year when he's had this entire offseason and everything to really get to know Andy Reid's offense and Patrick Mahomes, he is going to be an absolute stud with them. He's going to take Tyreek Hill's place before it's all said and done.
We talked about that on the show with Ben Thursday night. We talked about pick your Gator. And I forget, but it might have been you who picked Kadarius. I forget who else we had. But the Gators, they showed up and represented. Kadarius joins one of those elite numbers that scored a touchdown. Gators, only about a few of those. I think there's a piece of
great punt return. What a dazzling punt
return. Well, the record all time. All time, yeah, that was it.
Makes you wonder why he didn't return punts more often for the Gators. I mean,
it really does.
I mean, I remember that he had that one punt return against Vanderbilt, which was a total deception when they made everybody think that the punt was going to the right side, and it went left. But that was just a great job of deceiving everybody. Yeah. But my gosh, he was unbelievable.
Did you hear the announcer say that the special teams coach from Kansas City asked him before the game, did you know nobody's ever returned a punt for a touchdown? And he told him that before the game, and he sort of like predicted it, you know?
And, yeah.
It was amazing.
Brilliant second half adjustments by Kansas City. And I'm not taking anything away from the Eagles. The Eagles played, they played well. I mean, you look at what Jalen Hurts did, 300 yards passing, 70-plus rushing.
He played.
Accounted for five touchdowns. His future is rock solid.
Yeah.
Absolutely rock solid. You know, the real question is going to be, will the Philadelphia Eagles, pay the money that it's going to take to surround him with the talent to win championships, because they have a championship quarterback. And we've seen that far too often. Too many teams have great quarterbacks, but they don't surround them with adequate talent. You look what happened. Matt Stafford goes to the Los Angeles Rams from Detroit, where he never won anything. And first thing he does his first year there, he won a Super Bowl. I mean, they had too many injuries this year to do anything. But it's a perfect example. It's the single most important position in all of sports, without question. It's the guy I've heard that people say the quarterback gets too much credit when things go well and too little credit. Mm-hmm. I mean, too much credit when things go well,
yeah,
and too much blame when things go bad.
Right.
But it really is the single most important position in all of football.
Speaking of which, you just teed it up, okay? Now, we got to talk about your favorite son of Fred and Ethel Mertz, okay? I guess there's been an NIL deal for Graham Mertz. He got a new, well, he didn't get a Range Rover, but he didn't get to own it. He only got a discount on it, okay? So anyway, he is, I'm looking up his stats last year. You know how many touchdown passes he had last year?
19.
Correct. And they threw for 2,136 yards, but 10 picks.
Yeah.
Now, he was 19 and 13. Not very good. And last 32 games, or whatever, 34 games. Florida, guess what Florida was the last three seasons? 20 and 18. Okay.
20 and 18. Yeah, so, okay. So we end up with a quarterback that basically is
one less than exact, well, less than they won with Mullen. Anyway, yeah. That's just a little interesting stat, I thought. And then you look at that. I looked at the 3 years prior to that, the solid days. Thought it was 25 and 12. It's time for some changes, friends, to get this thing going. And we have. You're good at this for the next couple of weeks. I want you to bear down on this, what looks like the starting lineups. You're good mm-hmm. at roster building, and with a lot of stories that come out about that. I would love for you to go over that and build us a roster, and let's talk about it next few days or so. And sorry you could not be there at the Spurrier event on Friday night. It was just sensational.
So was the gymnastics. I missed.
I know.
I had to choose between the two, and I knew you were going to be there for Spurrier. Good. So, yeah. So
no, I just want to get due to Freddie.
Freddie's unbelievable. I mean, really. I think Freddie sleeps 30 minutes out of every 24 hours.
Yeah. Because every time I see Spurrier, he tells me how hard he works. Freddie works. But Freddie's on now, so I want to say publicly to him, what a sensational job he did. And this was something I was so proud just to be attending, let alone getting a chance to speak for a couple of minutes and talk about Coach Spurrier. Here's the crowd. Here's the guy right here. Oh, wait a minute. Who is that? Look at that guy up there talking, huh? How about that?
He definitely had more hair than the guy.
If you look closer, you'll see you'll see people like Jeremy Foley, Danny Werfel, Chris Doering. What an honor to be able to hang out with those guys for a minute, you know? It was just terrific. Yeah. And you know, when a guy does something right, he does it right. And I just got to say, Freddie Wiebe, I'm sorry, I didn't know that was me. I thought it was somebody else. Anyway, I got a bunch of pictures. So, and like I said when I got up to talk, we say, oh, no, not another thing named after Spurrier. Yeah, here he is. And I said, as far as I'm concerned, nobody has done, no 10 people at the university have done more for the university than Steve Spurrier. Matter of fact, friends, don't they usually build a statue to you when you win a national championship? Oh, yeah, how about one when you win a Heisman? So technically, he should have two statues. He's got a restaurant, and as far as I'm concerned, they can't name too many things after Steve Spurrier.
Well, here's the one thing that I'm always quick to tell everybody. Because there is Steve Spurrier, Florida became the true heir to what Bear Bryant said. Bear Bryant called Florida the sleeping giant. Mm-hmm. And he said, if Florida ever awakens, and we've kind of gone dormant, but I think the sleeping giant is back asleep again, and I think it's still there. But you look at what Steve did. He changed the entire football culture twice in his career. Once as a player, because when he became the quarterback at the University of Florida, I mean, you look at how few passes were being completed. I think Larry Rakestraw was Georgia's top passer when Spurrier was a sophomore. And I think Larry Rakestraw threw like 49 passes the whole year. You know, Spurrier comes along and changes that entire dynamic. What was that Furman Bisher wrote? Great quote. He says, Steve Spurrier would be favored to escape at his own execution.
And it was actually John Logue who wrote that, and wrote it after the NC State game. And I remember I was at that game. He said, blindfolded with his hands handcuffed behind him, Steve Spurrier would be a 2-point favorite at his own execution. That was the actual line. It was John Logue that wrote it. But that was wonderful. And, yeah, I mean, think about this. I mean, here, and that's what I wanted to say and didn't get time. I just wanted to say, here's the thing about it, all the stuff he's won. I mean, you don't even realize, never won an SEC until he got here. All right, he won six of them. He counts seven. But here's the thing about Spurrier, and we lose sight of it. He did it without cheating. Hello?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did. He did. And not only that, you know, he did it not always. A lot of people were allegedly out recruiting him, but he's the perfect proof of there's recruiting. And then there's recruiting the best players to fit your system. I liken what Steve did to what Dr. Tom Osborne did up at Nebraska. Dr. Tom recruited players that could run that option. And he rarely had a class recruiting class that was top 10. But he got those big old hogs who were linemen. And when he finally got the right quarterback in Tommy Frazier, mm-hmm. look what happened. Three national championships in 4 years. Mm-hmm. Actually could have had four in 5 years, except they lost to Miami in a close ball game. But Steve was the same way. He recruited the guys that fit his system. And it's a perfect example of what people should be doing now. They should be paying attention to when you start ranking, okay, this recruiting class is the greatest of all time. But did you recruit the guys that can fit what you do? Question mark. You look at what they did at Texas A&M this year. Look at all the guys that left. They got there and found out, I don't fit here. This wasn't about losing ball games. People are saying, well, if they had gone and won nine games, I think if they'd won nine ball games, people would still be losing because you got a lot of guys that never fit the system. Steve always kept it between the rails when it comes to not only just cheating, but absolutely recruiting players that fit what he did best. I give him tremendous credit for that. Very few coaches ever figure that out.
Well said. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to let you come close this out. We're getting and I don't want to put the heat on Billy. He's got enough. But we're getting to a point where we're going to look at things differently the next 9 months, next 10 months, whatever it may be. And it's going to come down to when the crosshairs are on him, can he stand up to it? Now, I know you like Billy and I like Billy. We like what he's doing. But the fact remains is that he's got to get it done this year. Because looking at the schedule right now, if I had to make the picks right now, I don't see but a 6-6 right now. Now, do I think it'll get better? Perhaps. But I will say that he's got to do it, friends, and it can't be any, and we won't cut him any slack, whatever. But let me just say this, and I'll let you take it out from here. Billy Napier needs to get it right. And I hope he's going the right direction. With getting his offensive line in there to run the football and a guy can hand it off and be a field general, maybe, and getting his defense better. But it ain't going to be easy, friends.
Well, and, you know, this is the SEC, buddy, and nothing is easy in the SEC. And I guarantee you Nick Saban would tell you that even with all the championships that he's won. It's not easy in the SEC because, you know, you look at this past year, look at Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt was better, was much improved, and they're going to continue to be much improved. Kentucky is no longer, you know, the team that everybody wants to have for homecoming. Tennessee is back up there. It's the schedule is going to be brutal. You look at it you can stretch it any way you want to, but you know, Florida's going to have to play at Kentucky this year. You're going to have to play Tennessee. You know, you're going to have to play Georgia right there. That's three ball games. South Carolina is going to be up there, and they're a whole different ball game up that away. On and on and on. It's not an easy thing. But I will say this. The parallels between what Billy did at Louisiana, and what he did this first year here are eerily similar. And at Louisiana, he went 7-7 that first year, and he was predicted to have moderate improvement his second year, and he goes out there and he wins 10 ball games. I think that he knows what he's doing. Does he have the personnel to do it? That's what's going to determine, you know, Ron Zook said it. It isn't about the X's and O's. It's the Jesse's and Joe's. Does he have the personnel to win at the level that he's expected to win, or that he expects of himself to win? And we're going to find that out. I know a lot of people are underwhelmed by Graham Mertz. I'm not convinced that Graham Mertz was the number one choice, but I think he was a solid choice when all things fell apart for other people. I wrote and I thought that Graham Mertz was going to be the caddy that held things together until Jaden Rashada came about. Now he's the guy. But if there's one caveat to this whole thing, buddy, it's the fact that Graham Mertz coming out of high school was the number four quarterback in the country. Now, that brings us to this question. Was he vastly overrated? Could be. Was he undercoached? Could be. Was he as good as he was ever going to be when he was in high school? So that's one other thing to consider, because we've seen this, you know, you and I, as long as we've been in it, how many guys have we seen that come into college football with all the predictions and accolades and All-American this and All-Interplanetary that, you name it, and they come to college and then nothing happens. And we sit there and ask ourselves, what's gone wrong? We had a death in the family with Caleb Boateng, who had transferred in here from Clemson. This is a kid that was like all world coming out of St. Thomas Aquinas, and he goes up there to Clemson, and he spent 3 years and did nothing and came here to Florida as a preferred walk-on, and again, didn't accomplish anything. And now he's dead, you know, tragically so. But this is a kid, buddy, that was as good as he was ever going to be when he was a senior at St. Thomas Aquinas. You look at all these great high school programs, and so many of them, they send 10, 12, 15 guys out every single year to college football, and maybe only three of them really turn out to be exceptional players. And you got to wonder, what happened to them? Well, I can tell you what happened to them. They were as good as they were ever going to be when they were in high school. They got everything, every ounce of potential was coached out of them. We had a guy here in Gainesville that was a friend of both of us, Jim Nyblack. And Nyblack was famous for producing powerhouse football teams. But look at how few of Nyblack's players ever made it to the NFL or even became big stars in college. And the answer is not too many. Why was that? Well, he coached it all out of them. Wright Bazemore up at Valdosta, same way. Look at that great Merritt Island team that was there when you were at Sport last year as your sports editor of Today newspaper.
Eddie Feely was the coach.
Eddie Feely was the coach. And that was a team that had, I think they sent 15 guys to college football. How many of them became big stars? Answer, zero.
Yeah, good point. As always, Francis, spot on. We got activities this week. We got gymnastics, baseball starting. A lot going on in the Gator Nation Kingdom, Francis, and you bring it to them. Don't forget, if you're not reading Franz and Gator Bait, you ain't reading. Check it out. Go to GatorBaitMedia.com. See what works for you and sign up. Get his column every day, which is the most popular thing by far we do in Gator Bait. Franz, have a good night, buddy. Good job.
Appreciate Thank you, it. Buddy. Bye-bye.
All right, folks, we'll wrap it up from there and just tell you about our friends at Redstar Medical Research. Always love saving them to the last because they're so important to our community and to what they do here, and they've been supporting this program in such a great fashion for years. I just want to tell you, so if you don't know what it is, you're interested in medical research or interested in being a part of it, you can do that too, because they have a very high reputation, a high quality patient-centered clinical research facility in Ocala. They're great stakeholders in downtown Ocala. They support many things. Most of all, they support your health. They're looking for ways to give you better health, and they have these research trials and clinical trials in areas of things like Alzheimer's and psoriasis and osteoarthritis and migraines and many other things that affect our community right here. And they love to get data from this area because it's indigenous to what we do, and telehealth the biomedical and chemical companies to find the things we need to take to get better. So check it out. Go to redstar.net and find out about what you can be a part of these, or if you just want to know more about it. Redstar.net. Renstar Medical Research, seeking tomorrow's answers to the health questions of today. Thanks very much to Franz and for our buddy David Moulton. And we're back tomorrow night with David Whitley and others. Tune us back in. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Have a good night, folks.